Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
Or my take at thetakeaway.org. Well, Washington is rightly probably obsessed with stimulus plans and bailouts, but let's think about the future. If we're thinking about what's going to get us out of this recession, we need to look to the past. What got us out of the recession in the 1980s? Well, that was the tech bubble. What got us out of the recession in the 1930s? Well, that was World War II. David Leonhardt is contemplating what is the engine that's going to drive us fundamentally out of this economic downturn. And looking at history isn't much of a guide. David Leonhardt, of course, a New York Times columnist and writer of the economics blog there at the New York Times. He joins us from Detroit this morning. David, thanks for joining us.
Good morning, John.
So are you having trouble finding an engine that at the end of the day, beyond stimulus, beyond bank bailouts, is going to actually drive the U.S. economy into the next phase?
One of the hard things about this question is we all want to know what's next, what's going to replace what we just had, and it's in some ways it's an unanswerable question. I don't think we can pick exactly what the industry of tomorrow is. A lot of people want to pick green jobs, which could help, but it seems hard to see how it's going to drive the whole economy. What seems to have worked in the past is a pretty active role alongside the private sector for the government in making investments. And it's funny, the government does a lot of things pretty poorly. There's no doubt about that. But if you look at some of the basic investments it's made, it built the internet, it built the highway system, it in many ways built the modern biotechnology industry through NIH grants.
Right.
It really has an excellent record in making some sort of basic investments. And the amount of investing that our government does in these sorts of things has declined really rapidly between the 1950s and now.
Is the government responsible for the current electrical grid, the technology of which is so criticized as being outdated and vulnerable to, catastrophic shutdown?
You know, I'm not a grid expert, so I don't know. I do know that the stimulus bill has some money in it, a fair amount of money, actually, to deal with the electrical grid. I don't know whether that's to help the private sector or whether it's the government itself.
Well, certainly electric projects in the West were a big part of the so-called stimulus package in the 1930s.
Absolutely. And I think there are all kinds of good examples of things the government doesn't run well. I mean, people like to complain about airline deregulation. Airline deregulation has been an enormous success. Flying is incredibly cheaper. Flying is incredibly safe. It's a lot safer than it used to be. If you want to sort of recreate the grand old days of flying, you can do it by flying first class and, just like back then, paying a huge amount of money.
But let's talk about that deregulation legacy for a moment. I mean, on some level, the deregulation moment caused a lot of the really bad excesses of the regulatory environment to go away. And we had competition and prices fell. And you're right, safety, was improved. But I think at a certain point, the airline industry kind of went off the cliff and there are all kinds of service problems. There was nothing to sort of stop the industry from its own excess, whether you're talking about capacity or competition that just drove prices into the dirt.
Well, I actually think airlines are a nice example. One of the things I argue for in this piece in this Sunday's magazine is that we have much more of an investment economy and much less of a consumption economy. I mean, the consumption economy is going away no matter what. And so the question is, can we build something like an investment economy? I think private companies are just in a much better situation to set prices and pick routes than the government.
I see.
What private companies can't do is invest in a modern air traffic system.
Right.
And so I think a lot of the problems that you see now in the airline system, I'm about to get on an airline myself, and now it'll probably be late in exchange for my having praised the system, come from the fact that we've underinvested in things like the air traffic system. And that is not something that private companies are able to do.
So I see. So if the government had increased its investment in the sort of infrastructure that allows the airline to function, we wouldn't really be having these capacity problems, and the excess, as I call it, would actually not feel like excess. It would just feel like more service.
I think that's right. Really? I mean, look, airlines were always going to make a transition from a luxury good to a mass good. And so to people who got to enjoy it when it was a luxury good, who were rich enough to fly back in the 50s and 60s, you would imagine that they would complain, right? Because we all like a luxury vehicle instead of a bus. But the fact is that most of that transition is simply about the airlines becoming something that millions of people can use. The delays and stuff, I think, are actually fixable.
Well, let's enlarge this out from the airlines then to the big fix, as you describe in your article that's in the Sunday's New York Times. I mean, is the big fix going to come from government, or is it going to come from the private sector when we get on the other side of whatever this economic downturn turns out to be?
I think one of the big lessons of this crisis and this crash is that government plays an indispensable role. That doesn't mean it runs the economy. That doesn't even mean it needs to be as involved as the European governments are in the European economy. But the government we've had has not been involved enough. It allowed all these terrible things to go on in the financial system, which then in turn forced the government to get more involved than we should want it. And so I think the government does play an absolutely vital role in a number of places. Education is one of them. There is no better bet for economic growth than education. I mean, you could look at nearly any measure. If you can look at states, you can look at countries. Places that tend to get more educated later on tend to get more affluent and healthier. And healthcare is another one. I mean, we're already incredibly involved in healthcare, we being the taxpayers, through Medicare. The problem is we're not involved in a very smart way. We pay for all these treatments that are hugely expensive, and actually, when you look at the evidence, don't do all that much to make people healthier. And so my hope is that this moment we're going through will be a reconsideration of the role that government needs to play in both a smart way and a little bit larger way.
Very quickly before we go, and I mean this, does the debt that we've acquired and the leveraging of the financial sector put a damper on getting to that place that you talk about in the big fix?
Not much of one.
Really?
Going to end up with a debt to GDP ratio of maybe 60% in a couple of years. After World War II, it was above 100%, and we all look back at the 50s and 60s as the golden age of economics. We can grow with this level of debt.
What do you know? Some happy talk from David Leonhardt.
Yeah, exactly.
Reporter for the New York Times. He wrote the article for this Sunday's magazine called The Big Fix. Joined us from Detroit. Get on that plane now, David.
Thanks, John.
All right. What's the best deal you've seen during these tough economic times? Add to the happy talk. Have you bought any big ticket items at low, low prices? Give us some advice. 877-8-MY-TAKE or mytake@thetakeaway.org. Where does your takeaway come from this morning?
The money spent is equivalent to roughly $200,000 for every job created, and that's not a particularly good price.
Congressman Vernon Ellers is not happy about the newly passed economic stimulus plan. He didn't vote for it, but he figures he has at least two, three, four more cracks at it before it actually gets to Barack Obama's desk. We're always on. If you missed anything, take our podcast to go. Listen to the optimistic interview David Leonhardt just gave us from Detroit in the New York Times. So subscribe now at thetakeaway.org or on iTunes. I'm John Hockenberry. This is The Takeaway.